Your story is waiting for you today. Your story has something new to say. But your story will only come out to play when you're alone. Alone. Alone in a room with invisible people.
The following episode may contain swearing. Alone in a Room with Invisible People is brought to you by hollyswritingclasses.com.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Gallardo, and I'm the host of Alone in a Room with Invisible People. I'm here today with author and teacher Holly Lyle, and this is a mini episode where we are answering one of our listeners' questions. So the question for today is it's two questions in one, and it's from Rebecca Ann. The first question is, do I introduce all my characters at once because they are four generations of the same family? The second question is, there are dark secrets running through all four generations. How do I intertwine them into the plot? Okay, Holly.
All right. This is a complicated question because you are talking about significant world building and character development and intertwining of plots. And this is what we would call an advanced question. Okay, for someone who has already written some straight linear fiction with one main character, one main conflict character, antagonist, and a very simple straight line plot all the way through to the ending. This is kind of like the secret texts, in that there are multiple characters with multiple needs and multiple conflicts who all have to interact both with each other and with the world's conflicts that are coming at them. So, with the caveat that this is playing the game on hard mode, let me go ahead and say that the first thing you do to make this work is you figure out what all of the secrets are in advance. This means you take your character, you write out a character biography of just the things that are important to that character and the things the essential points of that character's life where something went wrong. Character is not built when things are easy. Character is built when things are hard. So as you are building your character, you look at what broke in this character's life and how the character worked around that, how the character resolved it, fixed it, or didn't, and how that has left an ongoing hanging thing that this character must then resolve. So you figure out each of your primary character's most important conflicts and how you think that conflict needs to resolve in the story. Now, the conflict is going to be different than the secret, different from the secret. The conflict is going to be what this character wants his or her life to become and how the character both plans to do it and how the character either actually succeeds in doing it or fails, which are completely different things. The way you think that you're going to get to your objective is almost never the way you actually do. So then, after you do that, if you are writing in one book, you go through and you figure out a structure. Now here we're going to talk briefly about story structures. And let's kind of bounce this back and forth. I know I use plot cards, and I figure out, in a linear plot, you only have one character. Whose core story you're following. So you just do a sequential run-through of this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens. If you have four main characters, then you have to do four separate sets of this happens, then this happens, then this happens with four different characters, and then you have to start playing around and moving your cards around, numbering them with the...
She said, introduce all my characters at once because there are four generations of the same family.
Right. So, you know, the way that what popped up in my mind is when I took my kids to meet my great grandmother on her 100th birthday, which I don't even know if you remember this, but I
remember it very, very, very vaguely.
Yeah.
But yes, I do remember.
Yeah. That it was me, my uncles, my parents were there, my grandparents were there, and my great-grandmother, who was 100 years old, was there, and my kids were there. So that, there you go. That's the generations right there. Actually, that was five generations. You were the fifth generation there, because yeah. My great-grandmother lived a really long time. She lived to be 103. So you can do something like that, and it wouldn't be contrived. But then if you are writing one novel, you're facing the problem of having a 100-year-old protagonist. And where do you go from there? Do you drop back and show your 100-year-old protagonist when she was delivering mail on horseback, which my great-grandmother actually did, when her father was sick or whatever. He was, a blacksmith. And I know her husband was a blacksmith. But anyway, back to the focus here. You are faced with the problem of having people of vastly different ages in the same story, and either keeping them at their different ages if you're writing one book, and then probably having some of them die off in the story, which resolves their problems real damn quick, or in dropping back and doing a four-book series in which each carrier gets a linear plot, which would be much easier to write.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously, this is hard mode, guys.
Yeah. This depends too on, like, what do you mean by at once? Do you like at once in one scene, or at once in what exactly are you looking at? Plus, you know, the four generations of the same family, is it four different characters? Are you just talking about introducing the entire family? What exactly are you doing? But I would say it's never good to introduce all characters all at once.
Right.
Because you're going to overwhelm your reader, and the reader won't give a shit about most of the characters.
Right. We, as a reader, I need to meet individual human beings. I need to meet people that I can identify with and like. Even if they do some unlikable things, you have to sell me on the fact that this is somebody that I want to cheer for, that I want to like, that this is, that there is something about this person that makes this character worth my time as a reader. Because I can see assholes all the time, and I want to see something better. I want, when I am reading fiction, to step into a world where people I care about are doing things that I think are important. And if you try to cram four people into one scene and have all four of those people matter, first off, that's really hard, because you can only have one viewpoint character per scene. And three of them are going to fade to the background simply by matter of good storytelling, in which you are focusing through one set of eyes. So, you know, you are at simplest, structure-wise here, looking at doing four scenes individually in which each of the four primary characters is looking at the world through his eyes, either in first person or in third person, and probably third person, because I got to tell you, doing multiple first person in one series is an act that I have only ever seen Ted Sturgeon pull off successfully. You have to have really defined characters, and you have to have God skills in writing.
So it seems like what you're saying is it's best, I mean, especially if you're a beginning writer or somebody who hasn't successfully written a whole bunch of stuff, it seems like it's best to introduce one character, make this the one character story, then go into the, you know, it seems like such an epic idea.
Uh-huh.
That it would have to be handled very delicately, but at the same time, I'd say that the first question you've already answered, and it's a no, you should not introduce all of your characters at once.
Right.
So we'll just say that's a clear and well-defined no. So the second thing is having to intertwine all of these dark secrets into the plot. It seems like it almost like, okay, so you write down all the secrets, like you said, you get everybody's secrets written down so you know what all of them are. And then you start figuring out maybe
well, the one or two or three that I can put in book one, the one or two or three that I can put in book two. And then once you define which secrets are coming out in which books, then you have the ability to hint towards future secrets as well.
Right, right. Now, if you know that you want this to all happen in one book, then you're looking at a structure issue in which you have to figure out in one story how to intertwine four separate sets of secrets and not have them build over time and through four books. You have to figure out how different time periods and different character ages and starting maybe in the, what, I don't know, if you're starting in the late 1800s, like my great-grandmother did, and then working through in one story to the late 2010s, I'm just using as a historical perspective here.
Yeah, as if it was set now, then right. You would be looking at this timeline.
Right, because if you have four generations, you are talking about a story that takes place over a significant period of time, probably 100 years.
Yeah.
To do this and give it justice, you are going to need to plot out a timeline. You are going to need to figure out which events happen when. You are going to have to figure out how old secrets build onto new secrets and the consequences of those things. And this is not small, man. This is a big damn thing.
And well done, it could be really, really fascinating, too.
Yes.
It could be a really cool story.
Yes, but again, this is playing the game on hard mode. And if you are trying to do this as a first novel, or even like a fifth or sixth novel, you are looking at really, really grinding, and then probably having to do massive revision and probably having to do some serious rethinks.
And I cannot imagine, even just doing Glass House, even just writing that one book, that revision was more in depth than I think I was ready for. So it was a good thing that I put that aside and did Leaving Wanda Lucia, because just the revision alone on something of this magnitude and this scale with this many people, this many generations, this many secrets, this many plot points. I mean, this you're looking at a huge revision
right.
process.
Right. And I mean, it is a great concept, but
yeah.
we have touched on, or at least I have touched on at different points, the fact that there are some story ideas that you have that you're not ready to write. I think I mentioned last week that there is a story idea that I have that I am
yeah.
still not ready to write after 30-some novels and multiple years of doing this. There are times when you recognize a concept, and this is the one with the Minoan history intersecting with Ohio Indian digs and with some very strange mystical elements and New York City. And I am just not, my skills are not yet at the point where I can comfortably pull this off. But I am building them, and I am building them with that objective in mind, is to get there and tell that story. Okay, so what we're looking at here is a high level skill set. And if you're there, great, you know, go for it. It is a case of then figuring out your structure and building your timeline and building your plot cards and working to get your characters' lives intertwined over a period of about 100 years. So then if your skill set's up to it, that's excellent. If it's not, there are ideas you can save. And this is a really good, really strong idea, and it can become a fantastic book. But just like my Minoan culture and civilization in a magical New York City, with archaeological Ohio Native American digs, there are some things you just have to hold on to for a while.
Yeah, and you can work on it in the meantime too, while you work on your other stories and everything. You can always, because I'm still adding to Fulton Hills and Standing River and everything like that. So
yeah,
it does. I like that this brought up the idea of biting off more than you can chew, because not like there's no way of knowing whether or not this is going to be too much for you to handle or not until you sit down and you start working on it and you get a feel for it and you realize like, okay, well, this might need to wait a little while. There's never any ideas that are too big or too grand that you can never work on.
Right.
It's just a matter of working up to that.
Yes. And also start writing it, because that's the way I found out that my idea was too big for right then. And is, I think, still probably a little too big right now, is I wrote about 40,000 words of it and hit a wall. And it was a big, hard, mean wall. And I went, okay, I don't know how to do this yet. So, okay, now I'm going to go write other stuff for a while. And it's sat on my hard drive for years now, but it's still there. It didn't go anywhere. And I read it and printed off a copy of some of what I had from my Patreon guys, and they got it, and they, you know, thought it was awesome. And the first part is, it just falls really badly apart after that. So, you know, I'll get there. I will get there. I'm just not there yet.
So the idea would be to, like, if you can separate it into separate books, that might benefit you and the story best. Or if you feel that your skill level is up to doing something that is, a very literal epic journey of a family with their dark secrets and drama and everything, then you're saying basically you make a timeline, you write the character bios for all of the main characters or all of the characters that have their main points.
Right.
You would go ahead and add in all of the secrets, make sure that to have all of these dark things that you want to cover in there.
Right.
And then you would start plotting.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. So let me say, I have a very inexpensive, and by that I mean under $10, class that if you are not, I don't know where your skill level is. So if you are not there yet and you have not done scene cards and you don't know how to plot, that Create a Plot Clinic is under $10, and it teaches you the step-by-step process for doing that. And
Create a Character Clinic is also under $10, and that one would help with the building the biographies and the dark secrets and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, this is because I just, and also, even though we are answering Rebecca Ann's question, we're also answering, I think, probably other folks who are facing this same problem or will be in the future. So
yeah. Well, I mean, and it's not, what she has given us is just the very basic, you know, couple of questions here, but this is something that other writers have attempted, will attempt. Some people have been successful, some people have not. So this is probably pretty common when it comes to, especially when it comes to something like a literary drama.
Yeah, so I mean, if you are actively writing and writing regularly, you are going to have some awesome ideas that you're not ready to write yet. It's just going to happen because your brain can think up all this amazing stuff. But then it doesn't, it can see you in the stars and flying in a spaceship, but it just doesn't quite have the launch module ready yet.
So, and again, this is not us saying that you're not ready to write something. This is us just saying that you could run into this situation. So the best thing to do is, like Holly said, start writing it, start plotting it, start writing your character biographies. And if you feel that, because things change too. If you feel like you wanted to write this one big, huge book, and then you realize that, no, I want each character to have their own book or something like that. That the only way you're going to define that for yourself is by trying.
Yes. Oh, okay. So, which reminds me of something. I have had so many people say, well, you know, I've got this whole book figured out in my head. I know exactly what's going to happen. No, you don't.
Yeah. We discussed this one on, which one was it? Debugging a Plot?
I think so, yes.
I think, yeah.
But it bears repeating, because sometimes people won't hear it the first time and they'll hear it the second time. You don't have the book plotted out in your head. You have a very rough concept that feels whole because that's what your brain does. The second you get it down on paper, all of the little places that are missing are going to become very apparent. So,
which is good.
Yeah.
You want that to happen. And this is the same thing with organization techniques, right? So we think, okay, well, we've got it, but we're stressed. Why are we stressed? Well, if we had everything, then we wouldn't be so stressed. So you start writing down to-dos. And what you're doing is you're emptying your head of these to-dos you already know about, and then more pop up. So it's going to happen. It's the same thing with fiction. You have a plot in your head. You think you've got it down. When you start writing down the question or the plot or what you have, your brain is going to start thinking, oh, thank God, now I have room, I can think about this.
Right.
And then it's going to start giving you plot holes. It's going to start giving you characters. It's going to start saying, well, what happens with this? That is what you want.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, but to do that, you have to put it on paper.
Yes.
People who are just carrying their idea around in their head as someday I'm going to write this are not going to write it. People who start putting it on paper and start finding out all the places where it falls short are people who can then say, oh, but if I can see where it falls short, I can fix that. And that's big.
Now, you mentioned this in the last episode that we just did, the How to Write Flash Fiction.
Okay.
You were talking about how you kept daydreaming about being a writer and being home with your kids and making money writing, and it was going to happen someday. And you woke up one day and said, when? I had the exact same thing happen with art. I was writing. I've been writing since I was, 12 or 13 or 11, I think it was.
Yeah.
That was the first time I actually started to seriously try to write something. And it was awful. But so writing has always been there. And I would draw every now and then. But I had this fantasy in my head of being a writer and an artist. And, you know, oh, I would have this whole room done up. And, oh, I would paint. And I would do this. And I would do that. And it's the same thing with the stories. The daydreams and the figuring it out in your head is a procrastination technique. It is a way to never have to put your stuff on paper because of that subconscious fear that it's not going to be good enough.
Right.
It is a way, it is a stalling tactic, and it's a way to keep a dream alive without making it a reality.
Without taking the chance on failing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is the exact same thing. If you're sitting there saying, oh, I just don't have time, that's bullshit. I'm sorry. I don't want to be cruel. I don't want to be mean. But I have worked 80-hour work weeks. I have woken up at 4:30 to 5 to get to work at 8 because I didn't have a car, to stay at work and clean houses. I was a maid and we were constantly on the move. And then I would get off of work. I would get home at 9 and have to be in bed by 10 so that I could wake up and do the whole same thing over again. And I still found time to write, draw, make jewelry, read. You can make the time if it is something important to you. And I completely understand that some people have 6 kids and 2 jobs. But if you go to the bathroom, you can write down ideas.
This is true.
Yeah. If you sit and you eat a meal, you can sit there and you can write down a plot or write down a bit of dialogue that popped into your head. There is always a couple of minutes, and sometimes that's all you have.
Yeah.
Sometimes that is literally all you have, is a minute or two here or there, and that is enough.
It is. It is. It's. I have done this in 10-minute spurts, where I would just set a timer for 10 minutes, and in 10 minutes I would write just as fast as I could, acknowledging that, well, you know, I'm writing shit, but at least I'm writing, and you can do it in 5, if you only have 5, set a timer and focus and just write for 5 minutes and do it as often as you have 5 minutes. And you will be amazed at the amount of work you can accomplish. But I want to say something more about Becky's little story about art, is that about a little more than a year ago, she decided that she was going to get serious about her art. And so
This is 2016, the end of 2016, I decided.
Yeah. And she went from being a pretty decent amateur artist to being professional grade artist in 1 year by just burning through it, man. She did something every day. She joined this group. She did all of this work. And if you go to her RebeccaGallardo.com website, you can see her artwork. And she is just damned amazing. And this was okay. 1 year.
Take also into account that this is my mother speaking about her daughter's art.
Okay,
so
but it's not just me, because she is actually selling her artwork. So do not just ignore her, because she is diminishing the quality of what she does because she is bashful, but I'm not.
I am very proud of what I've been able to accomplish. There's some really amazing things in there. And again, this is me earning my time, though. This was me. I spent many, many, many years working my ass off, 80-hour weeks, sometimes more, on different things. I ran an Etsy shop. A lot of your wonderful people ended up supporting me when my husband went into an accident, and they bought some things off of the Etsy shop.
Yeah.
And I was a maid. I was a waitress. I was working in call centers. I have definitely earned the time to put into this, and I'm still paying for it because we don't have the kind of money that eventually I want to have. I want these to be a career thing. So it's also making sacrifices for the future. Yeah. So I put a lot of time. I mean, every day I worked on something, and it wasn't easy. It wasn't. And there was a lot of failure, because this is going back to what we were talking about, fear of failure. I failed every day almost.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a lot of painting is failing every day until you have the finished product.
Right.
So it's just, the story is the same thing. If you never write it down, you are never going to write the book, ever. It's, you have to start working someplace. And if it doesn't come out perfect the first time, that means your brain is working. That means that you're paying attention. That means that you are being honest with yourself and seeing that there are things that you need to add to your book. If you come out with this idea that you think is perfect, it's unique, nobody's ever done it before, then you are not paying attention.
Right. Right. And that's where writing it down matters, because at the point where you write it down and start reading more broadly, you will see that, yeah, there have been people who have done this before, and what you have to bring to the story is yourself, because you are unique and irreplaceable and unduplicatable. And if you put yourself and what is true to you into the story, into you, of the pain that you have lived and the conflicts that you have dealt with, nobody else can copy that.
Yeah.
Because that's you.
Yeah. You might have a story idea that has been done before, but you haven't done it before.
Right. Right. And that's what you bring to it. You bring yourself to every piece of fiction that you have bought and earned with your life.
So I think we covered a good amount of stuff in this one.
I think we have. So,
so yeah, that has been the mini episode, unless there's anything else that you wanted to add, Holly.
No, just sit down and actually start doing it.
So again, you can follow us on all the socials at AIA. RWIP, that is on Instagram and Twitter. Wanted to thank everybody that has been sharing what we have been sharing, and you guys are amazing and awesome. You can find us at Alone in a Room with Invisible People on Facebook. Go ahead and give us a like, and you can comment and share and everything on there as well. And you can follow our episodes, the show notes, and everything else at alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. If you have any questions related to this episode, feel free to comment on the episode show notes, or if you have a private question or a private statement or something you want to let us know, you can email us at rebecca@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. I guess that's it for today.
That's it. Yes. And thank you so much for listening and for hanging in with us. And go out and write something awesome, or write something terrible and just do it and learn from it.
Yes, either way, write.
Yes, just write something. Yeah.
All right, well, we will see you guys on the next episode. We just wanted to say a real big thanks to everybody that has been leaving us reviews, and as well as to all of you who took our words seriously when we said we wanted to send you the ebooks. Thank you very much for letting us know that you have recorded and sending us screenshots and saying, this is my username, this was this. And again, we verify and we have sent you the ebooks. We hope that you have enjoyed them. And for the future, this is still going on. Leave us an iTunes review. In that, you don't have to be in the US, you can be in any country. Leave us an iTunes review and let us know. Take a shot of it and send it to us. We'll verify. And once we have verified that you have left us that review, we will send you the two free ebooks. Mine is called Good Bones. Holly's is called Squick Studies. And we would be happy to send those to you. Those are just our way of showing appreciation for your support of our podcast and for your helping us as well. Because when you do leave us reviews, you are helping us. And that is very sweet and awesome of you to help us out like that. So again, if you have any issues with the podcast, please let us know beforehand. I know that the length of some of these episodes has been a little bit long for some people, but again, that is not something that we can change. The length is something, if you have to listen to it in spurts, you can do that. That's what I do with most of my podcasts. So any other issues, any concerns with the sound or anything like that, let us know. You can email me at show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. And now a word from our sponsor.
You want to write, you love words, you love fiction, but you don't know where to start or how to middle or where to finish. I do. I'm Holly Lyle, and I've been doing this professionally since 1991. And I know how I did what I did to go pro, and I'll be happy to show you what I've learned. Start with my free 3-week flash fiction class at hollyswritingclasses.com.